Welcome to The Offer, the no sugar added approach to the talent triangle with an unfiltered view of employers, candidates, and recruiters. I am your host, Michael Glinter.
The Offer, unfiltered.
Before we get started, just a reminder, if you need any type of services, questions, you are looking to do a sponsorship on my show, or you have needs as far as resumes or anything as far as the staffing industry, please email me at michael@michaelglinter.com. Again, that is michael@michaelglinter.com, so we can connect. You can also check me out on social media. And please, as a reminder, don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast to get weekly updates, as well as please pass along information to your friends and family. Back by popular demand, I'm excited to bring back another episode of Bad Bosses. In the first season of this podcast, we launched with Bad Bosses 1, and it was the most downloaded podcast episode for the season. And many people have asked me if I was going to do another episode of Bad Bosses, and I decided why not. So I decided to partner with one of my colleagues who's been in the manufacturing and consumer products industry for over 20 years. He's really got a broad spectrum of what he's dealt with from a boss's standpoint, but he also has some good guidance as far as what we need to have as far as cultivating strong leadership. So I would love to welcome to my show Sal Brucato from New Jersey.
Hi, Sal. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good. You and I are going to officially launch my next season. The beginning of season one, I did an episode of Bad Bosses, which surprisingly got the most listens to of my entire season, and has also gotten requests by numerous people to do another episode. And I should note, and this is something I didn't note the first season, you know, the purpose of talking about this topic is not to be disparaging or negative or condescending to people that may fall into this category, but really so, I think, for all intents and purposes, really bring awareness to people that do manage on how their behaviors may affect their own employees. And so, and I want to make sure that my audience knows that, because I did get a little bit of negative press from people thinking that I was basically going on a bitch session, but, you know, really not intended. To start off, I guess what I'd like to do is, you know, why don't you briefly introduce yourself so that my audience knows kind of where you're coming from?
Sure. My name is Sal Brucato, currently Vice President Operations at Allen Flavors. I have 30 years in the flavor and fragrance industry, probably split between both sectors. Graduated from NJIT with both bachelor's and master's, and undertook some PhD work in industrial and organizational psychology because I really wanted to focus on leadership, understanding people, and it's just been part of my job since day one of becoming a manager. And I've helped, you know, helped numerous people grow their careers and look for other careers. And I just felt that touch with individuals, something that I wanted to elaborate even more on, as well as the professional development and personnel and evaluation. Right. So that's where I am today.
Great. Awesome. Today's podcast, I want to kind of do kind of a two-prong approach. I want to first kind of talk about the elephant in the room, and that is, you know, consistently what are what we call good examples of bad bosses, which I guess is kind of a misnomer. But, and then the second prong, I want to talk about kind of, you know, what on the compliment side, what can bosses do differently to be good bosses? So I guess my first question is what would you say would be your top four most, you know, prevalent characteristics of somebody who just does not know how to manage people?
I think number one is you just, nobody can make you happy. You're not complimentary, and you're not guiding. I think that's number one. Number two, I think someone who is just verbally demeaning and, you know, will rip somebody apart in front of others. I just think that's a horrible characteristic of a boss. Number three, I think someone who talks about others disparagingly in front of other staff in meetings talking about somebody who either currently works there or previously worked there. I think that shows some, you know, bad class there. And I think number four, which I'd mentioned top four, if you're not developing somebody to replace you and looking at, you know, their career and others doing the same that work for you, I think you're doing a disservice to the company you work for.
Great. Excellent. So let's talk with number one, because this was pretty close to the top of my list. You mentioned bosses that don't communicate, I would say more inclusively, communicate their expectations, nor do they give you feedback. Do you feel like that this is because in their eyes, they can never do wrong and their employees could always do wrong?
100% correct. I noticed and witnessed that, I think, two times firsthand. And as much as they'll say that they're mentoring you and that they're, you know, looking out for your best interest, it's going to be their way or the highway in almost every situation. And that's just not productive. And if you're not getting feedback, if you're not getting an evaluation, if you're not getting a review, constant feedback, positive or negative, then they're not doing you any justice.
And do you find that oftentimes bad bosses that don't communicate their expectations, don't give you feedback, also, when there's an issue, they then blame you for the problem?
Yes, almost exclusively. It's if it's your department and, hey, we discussed this, it didn't get done, or, you know, what have you done for me lately type deal. It's you, it's not me. And you could have been waiting for information. You could have been waiting for capital sign-offs. There's a slew of different things that could have transpired. And yeah, you end up being the one blamed for it. You didn't push this, you didn't push that.
What do you, as an employee of somebody that acts that way, what would you think would be some of the biggest downfalls for that employee? Meaning, like, what would be the end result?
I think the end result, the employee has to leave. You know, unless the employee's brave enough, and at times I've known people to do this, I've even had to do this myself, where you go over that person's head. And, you know, if HR is not helping you in this respect, and a lot of times HR isn't, because they're working for the senior leadership and ownership of the company as well as the employees, but probably leaning more towards the other end. If you go over that person's head and you can do it without ramifications, great. If you can't, the only way out is to leave.
Number two, people not knowing what your performance was, not knowing, you know, not getting any type of feedback. Actually, it's funny because one of my good friends actually said that for 3 years, he never got a performance review. He never got a raise. They never told him what he was doing right or wrong. And then after 3 years, his boss sat down with him and said, our organization is not going in a good direction, and this is why you're the problem.
And I had the same result.
Yeah,
I went through that. Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, a similar amount of time. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually more common than what we think. And you mentioned something that was interesting. I think that the listeners should really absorb is that when I asked you what happens to the person, what do they do at that point when they're being put into these types of situations? They leave. They don't solve the problem. The problem's still there. Their solution is just to walk away. And statistics actually say that. There's actual statistical data that says that the number one reason why people leave an organization has nothing to do with the organization itself. It has to do with the person that they report to.
Absolutely.
And so your number one example is the number one reason why people leave their jobs. Number three, which I was just talking to a guy yesterday, and I'm going to air his episode after yours, so y'all will hear more into this later on in the coming season, is gossiping. And it's funny because I think to myself, you know, common sense says that we don't want childhood behavior in the workplace. Period. Why would we? You know, it's not productive. It causes irreparable damage, and it really is a distraction to the employees being able to really essentially be successful in their job. And I can understand when employees do it. But it boggles my mind on how many managers will talk about not only their bosses in the organization, but even other coworkers or their employees themselves. What about bosses that actually disparage their own people to other people?
Oh, yes. I saw firsthand, and it was at the top of the company. It's really bad, and you set this standard that you've told everybody it's okay to do, and that's horrible. And you try to do it as a manager or leader. You try to get all of your employees not to do that, not to share confidential information, but it's certainly not to disparage each other and put people down. You're trying to create a positive atmosphere. And if you're not doing it at the top, then
Absolutely. There's
a big problem.
Absolutely. And when it comes to gossiping, one of the questions I had for the guy that I was talking to yesterday was, what do you do when your boss is a gossip?
Wow, that's a tough one because I never addressed it in the situations that I was in. I'm not his leader unless I had a relationship that, we were really tight, and I don't think that's ever been the situation, especially with some of the guys that are at the very top. But unless you can go to HR and you have that kind of relationship where it's not going to get pushed back in your face, you can do that. But I doubt very many people are going to go to their boss and say, listen, I think what you're doing is, I think what you're doing is wrong. I mean, if you have the relationship with the person, I guess you could do it, but most people probably couldn't do that.
Absolutely. And then number four, you mentioned growth. One of the things we talk about a lot every day with a company is, what are we doing to organically grow our organization? And it's actually probably a much more common problem than we actually realize. I mean, the reason why companies have to go outside all the time to find good employees is because the people that they have in their organizations aren't ready, or were never developed, or were never brought to the level that they need to be in order to take over. What would you say to that? I get the fact that we say that it's the manager's fault, right? That, he's not doing enough to drive his employees. He's not doing enough to be that leader to mentor and train and develop. And I agree with you that I think that managers generally don't do enough to organically grow their employees. But do you think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they're scared that someone's going to take their job because they're better?
I'm sure there's a hint of that, but I don't think it's the manager's fault. If the company culture isn't to do that and to train and to develop, and that comes through HR, that comes from whoever's leading the company, what's the mission, what are we looking to do? I think that's the bigger crux of the problem. I don't think the individual, because I think individual managers, if you train them properly, if you guide them and telling them, listen, this is what we need to do, succession planning. I'm going through this now. I came into a company that hired me because there was no individual to fill their VP of ops role that they felt comfortable with. And one of my prerogatives and missions right now is to have all my managers develop their future managers. And it's new to them, but if I don't push it, nobody else will. And HR is working, partnering with me on this. And this is one of the things they wanted me to do because I've been able to do it. I think it's a company culture thing. I don't think the individual managers are the ones that should bear the blame for this in most cases.
Let's talk a little bit about some other things. One of them would be bosses that are always right, never wrong.
Yeah.
If you look at any good leader in history, both from a company standpoint, from a political standpoint, from a organizational standpoint, All those good leaders have one thing in common, right? They surround themselves with very, very strong people to support them and give them guidance on what to do, what not to do, what right to do to build the organization. Right. If you have a manager that believes he is the end-all, be-all solution to the problem and he's never wrong, generally, and I'm asking, I guess, this question to you, would you say that his tendency then would be to surround himself with weak people or people that don't necessarily have a strength because he wants to be the one that is able to stay in control, because people that do believe they know what they're talking about are strong, tend to be very outspoken?
I think they would more, you know, surround themselves with people who may not be weak in the objectives of the position, but may be weak in kind of what we hinted on before, going back to that person and telling them they're wrong. They don't have that personality. It's interesting you said it, because I'm actually listening to Jack Welch's book for the first time since it was published. And he mentions that, you know, too often people wouldn't come back to me, but that's why I've tried to hire people who will work for me and will tell me when they think I'm doing something wrong. And, even though he doesn't come across with that kind of personality, but it's the reality. A lot of times he felt bad that, you know, decisions we made, somebody didn't, you know, confront them about that.
Right. And so another one that I think is important for us to talk about is a boss who constantly changes their mind, who can't really stay firm on any one direction, and then ultimately uses that as a crutch to blame their employees versus themselves.
You can personally attest to that. And that's a credibility issue from a leadership perspective. And somehow that person has made it through by making poor decisions and by being wishy-washy, which I don't understand. I mean, that's a tough one. How is that person getting promoted into such high levels of the company when it may be obvious that their decision-making skills are really atrocious?
Right.
And there's nothing you can do as an individual unless, again, if you're vocal enough to go back at them or to bring it to somebody else's attention. But I have seen that, you know, one day this sounds like a good idea, and the next day, no, that's not what I had in mind. We're going to go this way. And I don't even know if that's, sometimes it could be, you know, as we age, we tend to change our mind and forget what we said yesterday. That could be part of the problem as well.
Right. Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about, so we've, and something else to actually think about too, in contrast to that, is when a manager does not have a stable decision-making thought process, when they're not able to make firm, quantifiable decisions, one of the biggest challenges then becomes their employees constantly have to chase a dartboard that they can't see, and are a moving target, let's just say. And the issues with that, or what causes the most problems in an organization, is if your employees can't pursue, or if the employees keep having to shift direction, not only does it cause irreparable damage to their abilities to do their job, but it also affects the efficiency of the business, because things don't get done in the time frame generally that it needs to get done.
Yes, and everything else will suffer because of it, because they think this is a pet project, or they think this is something that's urgent, critical, and, you know, their daily routines are starting to lax, and things that are, you know, just needed to run the business.
Right.
And that does happen. I think the one way around that, and I don't know how other leaders handle it. I think the first week where I am my current job, I spoke to all the managers that directly report to me. I said, listen, I'm not perfect. I don't know it all. You guys have been here a lot longer than me. If you don't feel comfortable with something, please feel comfortable enough to come to me and talk about it, because I don't have the ego. I'm not a know-it-all. And I think if we can establish this kind of working relationship from the get-go, it'll be great for us as a company and as an organization. And to this, you know, I've noticed that they're very comfortable with that. They'll come into my office and say, can I talk to you for a minute? And we've probably had millions of suggestions come through that way too, because they know that I'll work with them on that. And I think if managers handle it that way, it's a much better culture.
So what can we do different? So I don't want to make this episode all about the negative, right? We've hammered in some pretty big issues with bosses in our time. What do you think, what makes a good boss? Like, what do you think bosses can change about themselves? Not that they're really going to pay attention to this, but what can bosses change about themselves to make themselves a better person?
Well, I think what I just touched on is a key factor. I think if you drop the ego and understand that you're in it together. You're trying to do the best for the organization. And the more people that are working with you rather than just for you is much healthier for organization. Mm-hmm. I think HR departments need to identify leaders that will have that attitude versus do not. And if they do not, what do you do to combat that? Do you give them additional leadership training? There are certainly places out there that do the team. You know, I'm not a big fan of these offsite team building things, but I am a fan of the team building training or certain types of training that you have an individuals come in and they'll work with you one-on-one and saying, listen, this is the feedback from your group, you know, and while we don't want to single out an individual, the ramifications are that you're not listening to their thoughts, their processes, and you know, we need to do something different about that. But that has to be partnered with HR and the leadership of the company.
Right.
But I think that's part of it, because I think people are afraid, you know, they're afraid to tell somebody that, you know what, guess you're not getting it right all the time. Or as other leaders have said, listen, everybody around me tells me I'm doing great and they're boosting me up. Examples of the president, nobody's going to tell him when he's wrong. Presidents of companies have said that, you know, I've surrounded my people won't tell me what I'm doing wrong. And I think we have to lighten up a bit as leaders, but at the same time, the other leaders need to be able to step up and say, listen, I don't think that's in the best interest of the company.
Absolutely. And what about trust, complementing that, the trust of listening to their team? You know, I love it when leaders say, give me your feedback. What's going wrong? What can we do differently? And then you tell them and then they don't, the leader actually doesn't do it. I'm not being political at all here. I'm just talking about leaders. Right. You know, you have these, or I love when companies, and this goes beyond just an individual person, they do these surveys where like 90% of people say, this is what's the problem. But then it never actually results into a fix. Like they seemingly never actually do that. They never change it. But, you know, don't you feel like oftentimes leaders allow their arrogance and their not being willing to accept the fact that they're wrong, cloud the fact that the people that are reporting to them, who really should be their support system, is telling them to do something that really will make a dramatic impact in the positive for an organization?
Yeah, it's you're absolutely right. And sometimes it's only one person. That one person could, you know, they're the ones who are guiding the rest of the leadership team, assuming teams work as a leadership team. But I've seen one individual in a group of seven or eight say, listen, I don't think that's true. I think these surveys are a bunch of bull. You know, I'll take care of this. We're going to do this a different way. That's bad, because the rest of the group should be saying, no, listen, this is 90% of our group telling us we have a problem. What are we going to do about it? And the previous company I was in, and one of the first months I was there, it sounded like they were going to do that. They brought all different groups in and they met with the ownership as well as some of the, you know, major players in the company, and listen to everybody's thoughts and ideas. But 3 months down the road, none of that mattered. And even 2 years into it, nothing changed. And it was a shame, because they really took the right approach, but didn't know how to carry through with it, or just said, no, that's true. I know it's not true. We had 9 groups tell us this is wrong, but we're not going to do anything about it. And that's just a bad approach, especially when you got people involved.
What about bosses that don't? So one of the things I talked about the other day with a guy, we were talking about the topic of decreasing workplace negativity. And one of the things he mentioned was bosses' lack of understanding their employees personally. Like taking down that wall, I'm your boss, and getting to know their people. Actually understanding their people, understanding what their people are outside of potentially even
right.
work, so that they can be a better boss. How do you feel about that? Do you think we do enough? Do you think we not do enough? Do you think it's important? Do you not think it's important?
I think, unfortunately, most people, let me put it this way, I think there are leaders and companies that frown upon that and think that's a bad thing to do. I'm 100%, or I have a complete 180-degree version of that, because I believe the more you know about individuals, and you don't have to get involved in their personal life, but know what sports team makes them click, what things outside make them click. And then when you say good morning to them, you can say, how did your son do in that game last night? Or how did your daughter do at that recital? And things like that. And it goes miles above the motivational aspects of anything else you can do, because they say, hey, this person really cares about me. And there's no value you can put on it. It's immeasurable. I've seen it work throughout my career. That's the one part of, I think, what I learned to do early on. And it's something that I've been scorned for, because I'm often regarded as too nice. And it's because I care about the people, although I don't have to get involved, so emotionally in what they go through, at least I know what makes them tick.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Any other great boss stories or any other great boss, I guess, suggestions on how bad bosses can really change their ways and be a better part of an organization and not part of an organization's growth?
I think bosses need to get out of the mentality, the old adage of KETA, kick them in the you-know-what. Hopefully that's gone out the window, although I still see people in their 60s, using this type of management style. I mean, that is way too old, and today's workers don't adapt to that. I think some of the things we talked about is learning what makes people tick. And I think that's more important than ever now, because I think that the group of individuals coming in the workforce need that a little bit. They need a little bit more reassurance than maybe people did in the past. I think that goes a long way. I think, putting the ego, leaving the ego at home, working collectively, telling your employees that you want to hear from them, and I hate the word employees, telling your team that you want to hear from them, positive, negative, give me an idea if you have one, don't be afraid to come in my office. I think if more of that happens,
organizational
cultures are going to go in.
But then act on those as well.
Yes. Yeah, don't just put them on a piece of paper, do something about it. The 2 weeks ago, somebody came to my office, can I talk to you? I have these ideas. He came in to me within 3 days, all the ideas were implemented, and I shared it with the rest of the leadership group. And listen, this is just a case study for everybody. I'm not telling you whether you do this or not, but here's an example of a manager coming into me, a couple small problems, we managed to take care of them all, change some processes in the meantime, and his day has become so much more efficient in the morning. This is just a case study that don't forget to listen to employees and your team members and managers, because you never know how little an issue is that can turn into a big savings down the road.
Absolutely. And you mentioned something, I guess, going complimented to your comment. I do believe that oftentimes managers will write things down but never actually implement those changes. Oh, I know what I was going to say. What about people, bosses, managers, that their employees come to them and say, I have an amazing idea. It's going to save us tons of money. The manager says, wow, this is a great idea. They go and implement the idea, and then they go to their upper management and say, look at what I did.
No, I can't stand that. And unfortunately, I've seen that a couple of times. One of the earlier companies I worked for, they actually had this suggestion program where guys could write this out, submit it to HR, and then it would be presented to the management team. It was, listen, here's an idea the person has. And if it did work out, they got 5 or 10% of the savings over a year's period. So I've seen guys get $5,000, $6,000, $10,000 because they just did something different in a pot. And granted, this was chemical manufacturing. They did some kind of process change that they thought would work, and they benefited from it. That takes care of that because it's in writing, and the process is there to make it work. Others, I haven't seen any other company have that, and this is 25 years ago. I'm actually trying to do that now because I think it's great if they can they can put it in a hat somewhere or put it in HR's office and here's an idea I have, we can run with it. But I think they also know me that by all means, just come to me and tell me and we'll do something about it. And if you have that relationship, it makes that whole process easier. But if you're the type of person that runs with it and says it was my idea, shame on you. And that's a person that should have never made it through the ranks, but mm-hmm. That's unfortunately what happens.
Sal, I'm excited. Season 2 is going to be launching here soon. This is the launch episode. Everybody is going to get excited because it's going to be the start of a great season. You've brought in some very good thought processes, mindsets, with all the years of experience in management that you've had. It just gives me a breath of fresh air as well, because I agree with everything you're saying. It really surprises me in this day and age where millennials especially don't tolerate bad bosses.
Right.
That we're still light years behind where we need to be to develop and build a good organization. And I love it when managers blame their turnover on millennials being indecisive and not knowing how to be loyal, when you still go back statistically. You go back statistically to why people leave their jobs, and it always comes back to the same answer: their boss.
Yep, their boss.
And so I think it's really important for people to walk away from this episode not thinking that they can blame their boss, but also bosses realizing that they need to self-reflect. Because yes, if they're the problem, then they're going to keep having that turnover. And upper management, including HR, also needs to self-reflect when they see constant turnover within one department or within one part of an organization. Don't necessarily think it's something else. Maybe you need to look at how that person is managing. Maybe you need to look at how that leader is leading. Maybe that person needs training, which that's a different topic in itself, management development, which we could probably do another episode on. Sal, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about this topic. And I will put your name and your LinkedIn profile in my podcast notes so that people can contact you if they have any questions, want to get engaged. Maybe they want to come work for your company because they think you're great.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, right? Free advertising. Go work for Sal. Now you have to be up in... You have to be up in, I think, New Jersey, right? That's where you're at?
In New Jersey.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to relocate you there, and I don't think you want to relocate there on your own. But, well, I'm not I shouldn't say that. I don't think you want to take the cost of relocating there on your own. But if you're in the New Jersey, New York area, you're more than welcome to contact them. Anyways, Sal, thanks so much. I look forward to future conversations. Maybe we'll get you back on the show. And if there's anything myself or my audience can do for you, please let us know.
It's been my pleasure, and I certainly look forward to the opportunity to speak again on management development, other things like that. So I look forward to it.
Be safe out there, okay?
Thanks, Michael. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Please remember to subscribe to my podcast. Also, please feel free to share, like, send, tag your friends. Let them have the opportunity to listen and understand and get a better viewpoint from the people that we talk to. Also, please don't forget, if you have any questions, you can email me at any time. And I hope you guys had a great day.